Let's get Tony on. He's standing by. He is Tony Gosling. He is the host of the politics show on BCFM in Bristol. As you know, I think very highly of it. It's a very, very good show. I've said it 1,000 times. Former BBC journalist as well. And he's somebody whose opinions I seek out. I love listening to him and I love reading him. You can follow him on Twitter as well. Just look for Tony Gosling on Twitter. There's only one. Tony, welcome back, and thanks for giving us your time today. I really appreciate it. How are you?
All right, not too bad. Yes, I'm rather feeling I kind of called the election right.
You got it spot on.
I'm not very popular amongst a lot of the Labour people.
No, you got it spot on. I wanted to first of all ask you, a number of Jeremy Corbyn's friends, including Andy MacDonald on BBC Radio 5 today, they've decided to dig a trench for themselves and to blame the media portrayal of Corbyn, saying as much as, wait, I tell you this, saying that when they were knocking on doors, people were saying to them, IRA sympathiser and friend of the UK's enemies, and Andy MacDonald said, basically this morning, he blamed the BBC for that, live on air with Chris Warburton, said it's your fault because you put that idea in people's heads. Is there any merit to that argument?
Well, I don't think there is a lot, actually, because I've seen an enormous, very, very instant push as soon as the result was out on Friday morning for people like Margaret Hodge and the rest of them to go on the offensive immediately in order to try and shift the blame away from the right wing of the Labour Party, her, for example, and all these ridiculous accusations of anti-Semitism. And, you know, the general Blairite factions, the people that forced strong-arm Corbyn into taking a Remain position, and to force the blame onto Corbyn himself. So to make this an issue not about the Blairites in the Labour Party, who control most of the members of Parliament, of course, but to try and blame Corbyn himself. Now, of course, it is Corbyn's fault, but it's not the position that he took. It's the fact that he just tried to be too friendly to everybody. He wasn't really anywhere near tough enough with his own enemies in his own party.
Why wasn't he, Tony? You and I have had this conversation before. When he was elected, I wasn't speaking with you at that. Well, obviously, you were a regular guest. When he was elected, I warned my listeners who were thrilled. I warned them at the time. I said, he will do nothing, he will say nothing, and he will achieve nothing. Why? Why is it that this guy who spoke about the crimes of the British Empire, the crimes of the current British military-industrial complex, who talked about Israel and Gaza, why did this guy keep stum in the 4 years that he held the biggest job in the party?
Well, look, let's just face it. The guy's too weak to be a leader, and in fact, in a way, he deserves to have lost. But, I mean, this has been a deliberate tactic to undermine him from within his own party. And he needed to be strong to stand up to that. He just wasn't anywhere near strong enough. Mm-hmm. And it was Neil Clark writing on the RT website, where I had a column up until about 4 or 5 years ago. His article, he points out this fact I've not seen mentioned anywhere in the British press. It's amazing, isn't it? We can't get anyone in the British press who's sort of analysing. But he basically, a really important fact is Corbyn was treating his enemies better than his friends.
Yeah.
He's real, the people who is his allies within the Labour Party, like Chris Williamson, and Ken Livingstone, well, how did they get treated? Well, they got booted out of the party on lies and pretexts or whatever that Corbyn was forced or agreed to go along with. And those that were actually undermining him, I don't know if you've seen that article about Mandelson, Richie, from I think it was about 2016, 2017, no, maybe 2017, saying that I work against to undermine Jeremy Corbyn every single day. And this was a quote from Mandelson, a headline in The Guardian. Now, so far as I'm concerned, Mandelson should have been booted out of the party at that point, but it's okay, it seems, to undermine the leader of the party and say appalling things about them, where you're supposed to actually be opposing the government, not your own opposition. And I think Boris has shown how to deal with people like that. What happened when his rebels rebelled against him back a couple of months ago.
Yeah, he took the whip.
It was next morning, you're all out, boys and girls. And by the way, you're not standing in the next election, whenever it happens to be. You're not standing on my little blue ticket. And so, of course, all those people have now been removed very effectively and efficiently, and Corbyn should be learning lessons. But there's loads of people, of course, including Corbyn and McDonnell, who just don't want to learn those lessons because it's just a bit too much to stomach that they got it so horrendously wrong.
Here's, I'm not going to do justice to what Tim Stanley was trying to say, but I'm going to try and very, very, very quickly in a few seconds paraphrase it. Stanley has a brilliant opinion piece in The Telegraph this morning, and he didn't pile in with all the anti-Semitism nonsense to his credit, even though his colleagues at The Telegraph were very happy to do so. Stanley said this morning in his piece, he said, look, one of the things that McDonnell and Corbyn and Andy McDonnell and Rebecca Long Bailey and Thornbury and all the rest of them, Keir Starmer, failed to realise is that ordinary men and women, like, I'm an ordinary bloke, Tony. I'm an ordinary working class bloke from Waterford, trade unionist family. I'm an ordinary bloke. And what Tim Stanley said was, the party failed to realise that working class people were not on board with this progressive politics agenda. This vulnerable group, minority group agenda. Constantly harping on about the need for people to self-identify as trans. Constantly harping on about the need to deplatform people and stop them speaking. Stanley said they got it horribly wrong because ordinary men and women are just not on board with that. They don't like it. I think Stanley made a good point. What do you think?
No, I agree. I think the thing is a lot of these so-called progressive ideas that have been coming from the right of the party, largely, not just the hard left, definitely, you know, more from the right. These are the things which I think have failed to appeal to voters.
Yeah.
I mean, for them to lose in the most spectacular fashion since the 1930s is a real disaster. But what you've got within, I'm afraid still within the left, is you've got very entrenched views, people who are simply not prepared to learn, not interested in learning. They're looking capitalising, if you want, on their own failure and their own sabotage of their own party to try and stick the knife in further into the people they've been sabotaging. You know, this is what happens when Corbyn is failed to deal with the problems and the saboteurs within his own party. What he's done is he's actually made them much, much stronger. And they're now actually, you know, in their own delusions, people like Margaret Hodge, believe that they are actually now running things and in charge, even though they were responsible for the defeat, largely. I mean, the economic programme that Labour put forward is perfectly reasonable. I mean, there's a lot of commentators saying, oh, it was just unbelievable, this sort of thing. And my experience talking to Labour voters here in the city of Bristol has been that they liked Corbyn, but the main reason was basically just to do with Brexit, simple as that he had an incoherent position on Brexit. I don't think, you know, many people vote on things like transgender issues and things like that, but those issues have been used here in Bristol to make sure that the traditional Corbyn allies, some specific individuals which I won't name, have been excluded from being allowed to stand as councillors or as mayor candidates in various elections in the city. So they can stay as Labour Party members, all right, but because they've taken a position on transgender politics or whatever, they are not allowed to stand as candidates. So the Labour Party's got this very, I think, toxic mix within itself, which is trying to turn it into a specific type of party, which will never, I don't think, appeal to the vast majority of working class people, Richie. And that, I think, is actually exactly what they're planning. They are saboteurs. And if you're going to be a leader like Corbyn, who's a socialist, a lefty, and going to allow the saboteurs to grow, to pat them on the back and say, oh, well, we are a broad church, this sort of silly thing, then, I mean, he's been part of the demise of the left in the Labour Party. And it's been 40 years, at least 40 years, since Harold Wilson and the last real left-wing leader of the Labour Party, who actually made it to Prime Minister.
Yeah.
Probably 35 since Michael Foot, something like that, who was another real left-wing leader. But since then, there's been none. And Corbyn has just blown it, maybe for another 35, 40 years.
That's a very good point you make there, because it's going to be a Rebecca Long Bailey, Lisa Nandy type that's going to take the party into the next few years. You've had a number of people like Glenn McCluskey, of course, the union boss. You've had Andy McDonald today. I mentioned him. And they're all saying, well, it's got to be a woman. It's got to be a Northerner. You've got Jess Phillips' name in the mix there. Johnson must be laughing his backside off, as we say in Ireland, because what you're going to get with one of those people is more of this ludicrous, inclusive, progressive agenda nonsense that the public seems to be sick and tired of. So the defeat in 2024, Tony, well, it might make this one look like it was a close-run thing. They could end up with 400 seats in 5 years' time, the Tories.
Well, I mean, they've had all sorts of trouble in Scotland, and the SNP have really shown the way to do it. They've got to actually have a proper socialist programme. And of course, you've got the Blairites in the Labour Party are just stopping that. I actually had an exchange of messages with John McDonnell earlier about Rebecca Long Bailey, because I saw this story in The Eye. They seem to be the first newspaper to break it for change.
Yeah.
The Eye paper, about her being the sort of chosen person.
One,
By McDonnell and Corbyn as their successor, because these people always want to say, well, you know, I think this person should be taking over from me. But then, of course, with such a terrible election result, that could actually be a kind of curse on that person. Most of the membership might think, no, we don't want that. But then again, they might actually quite like the flavour of McDonnell. It's really difficult to tell the way the Labour Party is going to vote on this for the new membership. But anyway, I got a reply from John saying, do not underestimate Becky. I mean, quite clearly he's saying, yes, she is our favourite candidate. It's not just a rumour. And it looks as if she's the one they're going to be definitely pushing. But what I also said to him was, look, what is all this stuff about it's got to be a woman? This is just as sexist as the sort of stuff we've been hearing, you know, for many years from the feminists. You should be picking the best person for the job, whether it's a man or a woman. It's insane to say it's got to be a woman. What are you doing? You could be getting rid of half of your very best candidates to lead you into the next general election.
Hey, do you know what? I agree with you completely, but I'm saying, because I've been a big critic of Rebecca Long Bailey, only because she's the Salford Eccles MP. She's basically my MP. But to be fair to her, of the also-rans, of the usual suspects, she's fairly good on... I totally disagree with everything she says and stands for, but she's brilliant on the stump. She's a terrific public speaker. And I reckon her flaring up against Johnson would be pure theatre. She's very good. She's got an enormous mouth. I mean, if I open the window now, we'll probably be able to hear her tea. I'm pretty sure we will, in fact. But I reckon she's the best of a bad bunch.
One of the criteria here is that she's got to be good at Prime Minister's questions.
Yeah.
Because a lot of this is thinking on your feet. Corbyn was a bit pedestrian. He started off with this idea that he was going to ask a question that someone had emailed into him every week at PMQs. And that actually went quite well. And it sounded really good. I've got a letter from such and such, you know, this is what they want to know. But then he just sort of seemed to forget about that halfway, you know, a couple of years ago. If he'd have kept with it, I think, you know, people would be able to have taken him a bit more seriously. But I'm not sure that Rebecca Long Bailey is the person that needs to do what needs doing. Yeah. And that is an absolute 100% purge of all those people who spent more time attacking their own party during the election campaign. And in the run-up to it, certainly during the last year or so, particularly over the whole Brexit issue and turning the party into a Remain party, all those lot have got to go.
Tony? Sorry to interrupt you. Can I just say this? I don't blame them for the Brexit mess. I blame him. He's a trade unionist. He's been a campaigner against the European Union his entire life. What he could have said back in 2015, the year before the referendum, and what he could have said in 2016, he could have stood there and proudly proclaimed himself a Leaver. He could have said, listen, Labour Party's a broad church, and I understand that. I've got some MPs. They want to stay in. Listen, I believe we should leave, and I'll tell you why. Forget about bigotry against people from other parts of the world. Forget all that. It's not about that. It's about the rights of workers. It's about people with no skills or semi-skilled people being screwed over by the European Union. I'm not in favour of it. It's a dreadful thing. Do you know what I would have said if I was Corbyn? I would have said, look what they did to David Cameron. Cameron went over there, tried to get some sort of reforms. They laughed in his face and they sent him back across the English Channel. So as Jeremy Corbyn, I'm saying, I'm campaigning to leave. I think we should leave, and the rest of the party can do whatever they bloody well want. But I'm campaigning to leave. That's all he had to do, Tony, and that's not unreasonable.
Well, of course, you know, you're right. And, you know, by doing all this, he's gone against his instincts. Yeah. And he's not been true to himself. The other thing I say about who makes a good leader, it's got to be somebody who speaks from the heart. If you look at any political speaker, you'll see some of them just simply read out pre-prepared speeches. Yeah. And some of them are able to think on their feet. You find this out, really, during these live debates quite a lot. But, you know, that's something I'm really not sure about Rebecca Long Bailey, what you think, whether she's good at that. But that's an absolute essential. You can't have someone who stood there reading from a lectern or from an auto queue running the country. You've got to have someone who can think on their feet and speak from the heart, Richie.
Bailey is good in hostile interviews. That's the reason why because I hammer Bailey a lot, even in the early morning live streams. I give her a bit of stick, mostly because she's very loud. Pot calling the kettle black, maybe. But it's one of the reasons I give her a bit of stick. But, listen, tell me this. Tony Gosling is our guest, by the way. Thisweek.org.uk, The Politics Show, BCFM, is a must listen, folks. It really is. I know many of you do listen to it, and you regard Tony even very highly. I had an email earlier on from somebody who said, don't mention me, Rich. Love Tony. I was desperately hoping that Corbyn would win, because I'm very much down on my luck at the moment. And I am on unemployment assistance. I'm on some of these benefits. Do I have to worry now that they've got a blank check, as it were, for the next few years, the Conservative Party? Should people who are on the margins, should they be worried, Tony?
Well, yes, of course. I mean, you know, particularly travellers and gypsies, people like that, they're going to be hammered, it looks like. I mean, that's certainly part of the manifesto, is to bring in more criminal charges against, in fact, change the law to further criminalise gypsies and travellers. Now, for, you know, many, many hundreds of thousands of young people, they realise that they cannot afford to pay an extortionate rent wherever they are, usually in the south of England somewhere. So many of decided to go either to become either barge dwellers or, you know, river dwellers, get a boat and live on a boat, or else live in a caravan, and of course, then there's also the traditional gypsies and, you know, the English travellers, the Irish travellers who've been doing this for many, many years. But this is a major plank, it seems, it's in the manifesto. You know, we're going to give the police powers to confiscate caravans, to confiscate all goods, this sort of thing. So, I mean, it's the normal Tory thing, and of course it's the politics of hate, this. It really is, and the politics of envy. So the idea is that this works, this gets the Tories votes. And what happens is there's millions of people out there who have gotten themselves into horrendous debt, and they're paying horrific mortgages, and they're really not enjoying it. And what irks them more than anything else is to see someone go by with a carefree, happy-go-lucky attitude who's not paying any rent and living in a caravan. And this is one of the things that they've really done over the last 30 years or so, really, since the Criminal Justice Act back in the early 1990s, is to try and criminalise any sort of lifestyle that isn't paying an absolute fortune, an arm and a leg, just to live in a shoebox. So that's part of the Tory mindset, is that they want to punish these people who show the people who live in houses and pay rents and mortgages. The mortgage, of course, is this French term, the grip of death is what it means in French, the mortgage. And they want to show them that there is no other way to live, that they're going to have to pay their mortgage and forget about any alternative. So that's a really particularly cruel part of this new Tory manifesto.
Tony Gosling is our guest. So much I want to get through with you before we get to the top of the hour. Two things. I don't often get hunches. I'm not the greatest guy to get a hunch. But I had a hunch this morning. One or two Tory MPs were on television and radio talking about looking at the licence fee and decriminalising not having one because it's going to free up the courts. And I got a little bit of a chill, Tony, because what I heard was one of them said, one of the Tory MPs who was on TV this morning, he said, well, you know, lots of other companies, they have their own way of collecting money they are owed, debts. And I thought, Jesus Christ, what has he just said there? Has he said we'll do away with the criminal, you know, the law courts dealing with the licences, and we will allow the BBC, if they choose, to employ recovery firms to go after people? I think that's what they mean, Tony. isn't it?
Well, maybe they do. I mean, yes, and also, it's good to hear you defending the BBC a bit here, Richie. I mean, you have to remember, not all of the licence fee goes towards the appalling programmes that go out on network radio and Radio 4, etc. Yeah. There's an increasing amount of money that goes from the licence fee to pay for what are called local democracy reporters right across Britain. So all of the local newspapers across the country have got local democracy reporters that are going in and they do a bit for the BBC and they also file copy for the local newspapers. Now, quite a lot of times, I mean, particularly here in Bristol, you wouldn't know of the potential corruption going on within city councils and at City Hall if it wasn't for these guys in there sitting through boring meetings and reporting on strange items on the agenda, maybe little missing amounts on balance sheets going through on council papers and this sort of thing. So what the BBC are providing really is still quite important. And the other thing is, if the BBC were to go, then what would happen is you'd just have people like Sky, Comcast, you'd have, you know, the other networks, the commercial networks, Channel 4 News, ruling the roost. So the BBC is there really to try to, and of course increasingly it's not doing that good a job, but it's still in the region's pretty good, is to do the basic bog standard journalism, public interest journalism, to make sure that stuff does get reported. And quite often I've come across individuals who have said, well, we went to X, Y and Z and eventually we went to the local BBC radio station or to the regional BBC television reporters. And that was finally when we actually got our story covered. Nobody else was interested. I mean, I've also heard it on the opposite, just to be fair, today from Ian Puddick. I don't know if you've come across him in London.
Yeah,
he's just done an interview with a Royal Protection Officer, which is brilliant, which is he's well worth having a look at. And I'll tweet that to you after we finish speaking if you want. And this Royal Protection Officer is a brilliant interview. And he says to Ian, as part of this interview, he said, well, I did this interview. It's about Prince Andrew and various other things that went on within Buckingham Palace, etc. It's a fascinating chat. And he said, well, I went to the BBC Panorama with it and Channel 4 Dispatches. Eventually, the BBC Panorama offered me a much better chance of getting it out to the public. He wasn't particularly interested in the money, apparently. And then, of course, he did an interview with Panorama a while ago, and then they'd done nothing with it. And then it doesn't look as if they're going to do anything with it, and they've now gone cold on him. So this is another real, I mean, this is the power of the broadcasters is literally the Savile power is, and exactly the same happened with the victims of Jimmy Savile, is they were interviewed by the BBC, by Newsnight in that case, by my old friend Liz McKean, and then she found it impossible to actually get him out through that programme, so she actually had to go elsewhere in order to get the story covered. Eventually it was through the Oldie magazine. And then the Oldie magazine, about 6 months later, they sacked their editor. So there is a very strong and constant attempt within the UK, particularly the London media, to stop these stories coming out. And I know, I think it's well worth it that Ian has done this interview, and at least it's going to get out one way or another. But we cannot trust these mainstream broadcasters to criticise the establishment, not least of which because you've got big financial figures chairing the BBC nowadays. For the last 10 years or so, all the chairs of the BBC have been straight from the City of London.
All from the City of London, you're absolutely right. Tony Gosling is our guest, and you made a good point too about the regional BBC report. It's a very good point, Tony, because if they didn't do that, you can't depend on the Global and Bauer stations to do it, because Global and Bauer, as you and I talked about for many, many years, going back to my days in Spain, they destroyed local radio, didn't they? They hoovered up every local radio station in the country and prevented those formerly regional radio stations, which were owned by local businessmen and businesswomen, who used to do that. I started off at WLRFM, which is still a very, very successful radio station in Waterford in Ireland. And that's what the newsroom did. You know, they were at every county council and city council meeting, challenging what was being said, recording it, getting it to the people. And if those stations were to go and were to be bought by a massive conglomerate, well, who's going to do that job? You make an excellent point. Tony Gosling is our guest. We're coming up to 9 minutes or 10 minutes even to the top of the hour, the politics show BCFM. Maybe we have to figure it out. Maybe we have to accept, Tony, there's no reform in political parties. There's no getting real socialist leaders to the helm of political parties. What we need to come to an understanding of, as difficult and as scary as it is, this is my old chestnut. You've been listening to me banging on about this for years. We can never change anything through the political system. We can't, Tony. When are we going to accept that? Corbyn is proof of it.
Well, I don't agree. I'm sorry, but I just don't agree. I think Corbyn was the wrong person for that job. He just didn't do it very well. I mean, really, what people should do is they should look, you know, honestly reflect on these things and learn and do it different and do it better next time. Now, look, you know, the people like Margaret Hodge have not given up. She is on the attack and fighting to try and get her narrative and her agenda accepted as the reason why the election was lost. But, you know, the people on the Corbyn left side, the people who want social justice in this country, they want a fair deal for the poor, etc., they have got to get on the offensive too. They can't just sit back and say, oh dear, what a shame, blah, blah. They need to take the fight to her. So, you know, it's a political fight, and if you give up and walk away, of course you're not going to win. I think there has to be, you know, a very positive attitude within the Labour Party. People can get very, very active. You know, if they don't, what's going to happen is all the hundreds of thousands of members that have joined in the last 5, 6, 7 years, they are going to just leave again. And you need to be able to have a bit of faith that the membership want to see a socialist party. And I think they do. And what we're hearing, of course, in most of the media from all these Blairites, Margaret Hodge, etc., is that they don't. And that the main thing to think about is anti-Semitism. Nonsense. There's no anti-Semitism to speak of.
No.
Really? Hardly at all in the Labour Party. The whole thing is the Emperor's new clothes. You know, come on, Margaret. We can see right through them.
We live in a constitutional monarchy. We don't live in a democracy. So Jeremy Corbyn would have gone back, or will go back again this week, and he will take the oath of allegiance to Queen Elizabeth II and all her heirs. It's a sham, Tony, isn't it? This is why I keep banging on about it. It's a sham. We don't live in a democracy. It's a constitutional monarchy. It's a myth.
Well, it is, yeah. But, I mean, it all depends on the character of the Queen. You know, the Queen is very, very wealthy, but I don't see her as with too little, you know, red horns sticking out through her crown. You know, she's not a totally evil person. I mean, we've seen also, I mean, you're absolutely right to talk about the head of state, because of course it's extremely important who they are. We're now in the position that we've been told just a couple of weeks ago that the head of state may change in 18 months. This is a leak from the palace. And that we will probably be seeing Prince Charles taking over in 18 months to be Prince Consort along with Camilla. And I did speak to you last time about the Epstein scandal and Prince Andrew, suggesting that the attacks on Andrew are really just an attempt to character assassinate him, so he can take no part in any discussion about who succeeds the Queen. Because I don't think, you know, he's a bit of a duffer, really. He comes across as a bit of a bully and a twit. So that, I think, is a large part of what's going on at the moment. There's also a manoeuvring by Prince Charles, and Charles and William, I noticed just the other day, are saying, well, we've got to trim down the royal family and have less, you know, of course. And they're not going to trim themselves down, are they? They're just trying to consolidate power. That's all they're doing, and trying to make sure that Charles can take over. I don't know if he's going to do a very good job. Certainly Diana, who I believe was murdered in Paris, you know, and of course Charles would know that. I would also imagine that he took some part in that, not actually physically doing it, but being involved with the replacement of the MI6 station chief in Paris just a few weeks before, and putting Sherard Cowper-Coles in charge, who then went on to become to go out of MI6 and become one of the chairs of BAE Systems, the arms manufacturer. So, you know, I think that Charles is, you know, he's not going to be a popular leader. And so therefore there is a lot of manoeuvring, I think, right now to make sure that that all happens as smoothly as possible. Of course, I don't think it will be particularly smooth, and I don't think he'll be as successful or as popular as the Queen's been.
Yeah, and hopefully at that stage the British people will wake up to it and get rid of them, turf them all out, every one of them, and the history of them, get it all out. Tony Gosling is our guest. Just a couple of minutes left. Tony, I've done programmes upon programmes with historians that talked about these families, these European royal families, how they intermarried with some of the biggest financial families of the last millennium even, and how they sold us the big red herring of democracy. You know, when they realised that people were waking up to who was ruling them, let's give them democracy. You know, we're talking about the biggest private landowner on planet Earth. I totally respect you not characterising the Queen as evil, but I think what she represents is evil that's almost unimaginable. I mean, you look at the paedophilia, you look at the how close into that circle Jimmy Savile was. We know what Mountbatten was. I mean, they love a good paedophile there as well. But look, I respect what you said on that. Brexit then, Tony, just to finish with this, just for a couple of minutes. It's a whopper of a lie by Boris Johnson, isn't it, to say that he will properly leave the European Union and that a trade deal will be done and it'll all be done and dusted by this time next year, 2020. That's got to be a lie, right?
Well, I don't know. I've really no idea. I'm sorry to say. It depends who he puts in charge of this process. There are some very good people. I would suggest people like Steve Baker, David Davis, could be in charge of that process, and then they might actually squeeze quite a good deal out. I mean, both of them have said very clearly that the problem in the past has been that the civil servants insist on doing the actual negotiation, rather than any of the politicians getting involved. And of course, you've got serious problems there because you've got civil servants who were largely, the whole civil service pretty much was for Remain. Mm. So you've still got these people working in there. They're not necessarily going to be that easy to get rid of. But I would think if anyone can do it, people like Steve Baker and David Davis can do that. So, I can't predict whether or not it's going to be successful. But the key is going to be making sure that we are not under the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice, because although, of course, it helps to have European human rights law, that's not the same jurisdiction as the European Court of Justice, that they would rule on things like trade rules. So, for example, Jeremy Corbyn said he wanted to nationalise the water industry. Well, the water industry is quite able to go to the European Court of Justice and say, well, we're going to fight this through the courts. We're not going to let them nationalise us. So, I mean, at least we're not going to have to be dealing with that straight away, but we need to be out of that European court to enable any future British government to actually do what it wants in the country and to change things in a positive way. But I'd say the most important thing that we need to be doing is really looking at turning the banking system into a utility run by the Treasury or run by accountable people in the public interest, because we could see an enormous renaissance through bank loans of industry, and to allow entrepreneurs to get on, and, you know, by providing things like cheap workshop space, by having a reset in the housing market so people are not paying all their wages in rent and mortgages, we could actually have some sort of economic renaissance. But the key to that is the governor of the Bank of England, obviously Mark Carney. When he's replaced, we need to keep a very, very close eye on whose that is. I'd like to see Mervyn King brought back, because he was, although he was responsible for this terrible 2008 crisis, the guy has been very, you know, humiliated by it and humbled by it, and he's now come up with all sorts of great ideas and interesting things that we could be doing in the economy to actually get a flat economy, make sure that people are not, basically, look, in a nutshell, that the financial system works for people, not people working for the financial system. To turn what we've got right now, for the vast majority of people who are effectively wage slaves, to turn that system on its head, Richie. Yeah. And if anyone could do it, Mervyn King could. I mean, you know, I think he's a very, very worthwhile guy. He's come up with lots and lots of sensible stuff over the last 4 or 5 years, and he's called it right every time, as far as I can see, apart from 2008, where he learnt rather a nasty lesson.
He certainly did. Tony, thanks for coming back on today. The Politics Show, BCFM, Fridays, you don't want to miss it. Thisweek.org.uk. If you've never heard of the Bilderberg Group, go to Bilderberg.org. It is the archive for everything Bilderberg as well. Love having you on, mate. Thanks for doing that today. I really appreciate it. And you got it spot on.
The other thing I'm digging into, of course, is Martin Bormann, Hitler's secretary, the treasurer of the Nazi Party, and his very close relationship with Winston Churchill, amazingly. And Churchill's name is mud. If you read a lot of the stuff that we've been digging out, you'll find Churchill was really just dealing with the Nazis for the last year of the war to take all their money and give it to organised crime.
When first of all, Merry Christmas, by the way. When you were on, not last time, but the time before that, you mentioned Bormann. Let's, in the new year, when you're ready to go, let's have a show on that. Let's do 45 minutes to an hour, because it is hugely interesting. It's brilliant work by you. I want to get into that. And Merry Christmas to you and everybody at BCFM. The show is great. I'm glad you're doing it. There's nothing like it in the UK, on UK radio anywhere. And thanks for coming on in 2019 and sharing your time with us. I really appreciate it, too.
You know what, Richie? There's nothing like you either.
You're a gent.
And Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners. God bless.
Cheers, mate. Bye for now. The brilliant Tony Gosling, thisweek.org.uk, BCFM, The Politics Show, Fridays. Don't miss it.